Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, this is the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotion with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and followers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lives online. Listen to your favorite spiritual and master teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. My name is Luciana Stiglitz. I'm the founder of Inner Healers, and I will be your host in this adventure. May you allow yourself to enjoy it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglitz, and I will be your host today. Stress is, unfortunately, a natural part of life, especially in our busy and hectic modern times. But you don't have to let it get in the way of your health and happiness. Studies show that the key to coping with stress is simpler than you think. It's all about how you respond to the situation and things that stress you out or threaten to overwhelm you. The Stress Proof Brain book offers powerful, comprehensive tools based in mindfulness, neuroscience, and positive psychology to help you put a stop to unhealthy responses to stress. Instead, you'll discover unique exercises that can provide a recipe for resilience, empowering you to master your emotional responses, overcome negative thinking, and create a more tolerant, stress-proof brain. Our very special guest for today, she's Melanie Greenberg. She's a PhD, and she's also a clinical and health psychologist with a private practice in Mill Valley, California. She also has an academic and research background and provides workshops for the public and health professionals. She helps clients and providers address the effects of life stress on relationships, self-care, health, career, and parenting. Dr. Greenberg applies her knowledge of cognitive behavior therapy, mindfulness, and affect regulation to promote growth and resilience. Join us when we present her very latest book called The Stress-Proof Brain, Master Your Emotional Response to Stress Using Mindfulness and Neuroplasticity, which is also available through Amazon. Help me welcome Melanie. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. How are you? I think it's lunchtime over there.
Good morning, Melanie. Thanks much for being with us. Yes, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. Yeah, I'm excited. It just came out this month.
Yes, it just came out. Yes, I'm so happy to see it finally. It took you some years to make it. So I'm really, really excited about your new book. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been, you know, a dream and it's been a project. And I've worked really hard on it, so it's nice to get it to this point.
Yes, so for our listeners, in your experience, what would you say is the definition of stress? Is it a cause? Is it a symptom?
Stress is, I think, there's many different ways to define it. It's a very well-used term. Everybody, you know, knows stress sort of intuitively. But there's a cause, I guess you could call it a stressor, is when something happens in the environment, something happens that threatens something that's important to you. It's like there's something important at stake. Or the other way might be that there's a lot of demands, there's, you know, extra demands on you. And the symptoms normally are that your brain has a stress response. And so there's this part of your brain called the amygdala, it's kind of an alarm center, and it starts telling you something's important, something's urgent, and then it kind of hijacks your brain. It starts a whole biochemical process with cortisol and with neurotransmitters to try and alert you and kind of get you invigorated to deal with whatever it is you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. So what role does the amygdala play on stress response?
The amygdala. So what it does...
Yes, the amygdala.
It's like your brain's fire alarm. It starts telling your body there's something here that you'd better pay attention to. And it starts the fight-flight response, which means that it starts getting your body ready to fight or to run away. And pumping blood to your large muscles of your arms and legs makes your heart beat faster and makes your breathing more shallow. It sends glucose to your brain. And this is wired in from thousands of years ago, where, the threats we used to face were more like lions and tigers and actual predators attacking us. So it's preparing us actually to fight off a predator. But today's stresses are different. You don't necessarily need to, go running away or go fighting. Sometimes you just have to, it's more in your head, like you have to make a decision. So that the response can kind of get you off track sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And where are the types of stressors, or what are the types of stressors one can face in daily life?
So, there's lots of different kinds of stressors. Some examples might be what we might call daily hassles. And I don't know, we might experience this more here than you guys, but sitting in traffic, big traffic jams every day on your way to work, that might be what you would call a daily hassle. It's stressful. It's kind of like you're blocked. You're blocked from your goals. You just have to sit there. And other chronic stresses might be like financial stress. You've got lots of bills to pay. Those might be some examples. We also have things like major life events. Somebody gets sick or somebody dies or you lose your job. A relationship breaks up. So that's more like kind of a single event, but that has a lot of consequences or fallout from it. Another kind of stress, it just might be a transition, like a developmental transition. It's kind of normal, like you go to college or you get married or you have a baby. That has positive aspects as well, and it's exciting and invigorating, but also requires an adjustment, and you have to put resources into it. And then there's traumas, which is the more severe the kind, like you get raped, somebody, or you have a major car accident. And then there's stuff from childhood, that maybe happened a long time ago, but that still affects you today. And you can call it adverse childhood events or adverse childhood experiences, like you had a very critical parent, or a parent was an alcoholic. And sometimes that can affect your brain and make you more reactive to the stresses today.
Mm-hmm. So, according to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, how can one stay grounded in the present moment when one is having problems providing basic needs for themselves?
So, mindfulness is probably the most important tool. There's a whole toolbox I have in my book, but mindfulness is a very important tool when you're dealing with stress. And because stress it takes your brain away, you start worrying about all these negative things that can happen. And so, you kind of go in a flight, and then you may do something impulsive, or you may just feel frozen. Mm-hmm. So mindfulness just can bring you back, okay, what's happening right now? Well, what's most important to focus on right now? And sometimes if you just focus on what's happening in my body, oh, I'm like kind of getting tense. Okay, let me kind of calm down. It brings you back to the present moment so you can kind of have a calmer mind to think about what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned mindfulness. How can meditation help us deal with the emotions that we're facing in stressful situations?
So again, you know, emotions can come on us very suddenly and very strong, like waves, especially when we're stressed out and when all these chemical things are happening in our body. So mindfulness can help you just have a different attitude to your emotions. It's almost like it gives you a part of you that can step aside from the emotion and just look at what's happening. So, you know, being mindful, I guess one definition you can think of would be the paying compassionate attention, deliberate and compassionate attention to whatever's happening in your mind and body in the moment. So mindfulness, instead of just being reactive to the emotion, mindfulness helps you take a step back and look at what's going on. And it might be, oh, my chest is tightening, I'm breathing fast, I feel anger arising, I'm having all these negative thoughts. Okay, let me just look at what's going on. And so it allows you to let in the emotion, like you can, you're labeling it, this anger, and I feel it in my chest. But you're letting it in without just like kind of acting impulsively, and you're just watching it and letting it give you information, because your emotions give us information. And then, you know, it can help you figure out what you want to do with that emotion, those thoughts. You want to pay attention to them. You want to take a step back and calm down? Do you want to, like, use the energy to get a lot done? So it's a different way of relating to your own feelings that makes them more tolerable and that makes you more compassionate to them.
Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, can you please explain what is the role of the prefrontal cortex and how is it that it can help us move forward in life?
So the prefrontal cortex is kind of, you can think of it as the CEO, like the executive center of our brains. And the information gets there more slowly. It's located just behind your forehead. And so when you're stressed, the information will get to your amygdala first, and so you'll go into fight or flight very quickly. Whereas a little bit later, if you just give it a few minutes or a few seconds, you take a few breaths, the information gets to your prefrontal cortex, and that gives you a more rational approach and a more kind of a broader perspective on what's happening. So you can make better decisions. And the prefrontal cortex gets information from the amygdala, like, oh, there's something happening here I've got to do something about, or I've got to pay attention to find a response. But it also gets information from other parts of your brain, like your hippocampus, your memory center. And so, it can get information from your memory center, like, oh, this is not so bad. You've managed to deal with something like with stuff like this in the past, and it's turned out successful. So then it can feed information back to the amygdala. It's okay. You can calm down. We've got this. We've done this before. So the prefrontal cortex helps you decide how to act. So you don't just go, fighting or fleeing. But it might be, it's best here. Oh, okay, maybe I need to have a conversation. Or, maybe I need to learn a time management skill. Maybe I need to kind of, put some energy in here and communicate my excitement about the project. So it basically integrates a lot of different information. It can calm your amygdala down, and it just helps you make a more rational decision how to act. What's best for me right now to be doing to manage the situation.
Mm-hmm. So also for our listeners, can you explain what is neuroscience and how is it that neuroscience proves that we can choose the adequate mindset in front of difficulties?
I'm sorry, just give me one second. Sorry, I'm just clients. You said, how can
I... Are you feeling okay?
I am. I'm just getting over a virus. I apologize. There's something going around here. My whole family has it.
Oh, no, a virus. Yeah, sometimes when the weather is changing, we get these viruses. Yeah.
It's been very rainy here, like more rainy than normal. There have been big storms. And it's winter, and somehow everybody's sick. So, but I'm okay. I just have a cough now and then, so I apologize for listening.
It's okay. But I hope you got some water close to you so you can drink a little bit of water.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So can you repeat the question? I didn't hear it properly.
So So considering our listeners, can you briefly describe what is neuroscience and also how is it that neuroscience can prove that we can choose the adequate mindset when we're facing difficulties?
Okay, so neuroscience, I guess you could think of as brain science. We know a whole lot more about the brain than we used to because of new technology. It's said that we've discovered more about how the brain works in the past 10 years than in the previous 100 years. So, you know, it's a very exciting time in terms of how much more we understand the brain. And, of course, it's exciting for psychology because that can inform our methods. You know, we can lead to more effective methods when we see exactly what's going on. There's a they do scientific experiments with fMRI. It's called functional magnetic resonance imaging. Basically, you can scan the brain in real time and see which areas of the brain light up when the person, you know, has certain information or thoughts or is reacting to certain things. So you can actually see, oh, now the amygdala is lighting up. Oh, now the prefrontal cortex is lighting up. Oh, now they're communicating with each other. So it really helps us understand, you know, for the stress response, how the stress response actually works and in a dynamic way, how it unfolds over time and how the different areas of the brain communicate. So this is very exciting. I find it really helps my clinical work, and it's been one of the most exciting pieces because, you know, when people get overwhelmed with anxiety or depression or stress or they often just don't really know what's happening. They feel very helpless. They often just feel overcome with emotions or negative thinking, and they feel, you know, they don't know what to do about it. And neuroscience can tell you, like, look, this is what's happening. It's actually this part of your brain lighting up. It's your brain. It's not you. You don't have to feel so bad about yourself for having these thoughts. And you don't have to, you know, feel so bad about yourself that you got overwhelmed and you did something that wasn't, you know, helpful. It's just your wiring. It's just your brain. But, you know, with lots of repeated practice every day, we can actually change the structure of our brains somewhat. We can learn new habits, and those habits over months and years of repeated practice can translate into new brain pathways. So, you know, whereas maybe you have a negative pathway when you feel stressed, if stress comes in, maybe you feel helpless because maybe you grew up in a family where, you know, there wasn't really a good, you know, no one paid attention to what you were feeling. Negative things would happen anyway, regardless of what you did. So, you know, that's created a pathway in your brain where you feel stressed and you just feel, sometimes feel helpless. Well, nothing is going to work. But you can actually create a new pathway by just every day practicing a new way of thinking and a new way of acting. So you might say to yourself, well, I know that I'm feeling helpless, but it doesn't mean I am helpless. And you know, let me redirect my attention and, you know, just try to take a small step today, some easy thing I can do. And, you know, if I do that every day, let me watch and see, maybe things are different now. So over time, that will create a new pathway, you know, with new results. And I think that's what's so exciting about neuroscience.
Mm-hmm. So in your experienced opinion, how can one know it is time to look for help?
It's time to look for help, like that you're not managing well on your own?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, like to go to therapy or something, or seek some other kind of treatment. You know, I think it depends on your degree of suffering. So that's one indicator, how much are you suffering? You know, how miserable, how overwhelmed and sad and depressed and despondent do you feel? So, you know, if that's kind of reaching a moderate to high level, moderate level, it would be good to go and just get that checked out and assessed and make sure it's not, you know, there's not too much depression going on. Another indicator is like if it's getting in the way of your life, your emotions are getting in the way of your life and of being successful and happy, and or, you know, at least trying to be happy or enjoying some aspects of what you have, you know. So if you kind of don't feel like going to work, or you start missing work, if your relationships aren't working, you know, you're grumpy in your relationships, things aren't going well, you get sick all the time, and it's not just like, you know, a virus, but just more like a repeatedly. Some people have chronic pain, you know, things like that. Then that's also an indicator. Or if you just feel you're drinking too, you know, you're turning to unhealthy ways to cope, like, you know, drinking too much, or you're just isolating yourself in your apartment and not, you know, getting out in the world. If you're avoiding the problem and you're not, you know, you're procrastinating, you're avoiding, or you can't concentrate, those would be sometimes it would be important to get help. So it's how bad you feel, and then it's also how it's affecting your life, and then maybe how it's affecting the other people around you. You know, is it affecting your kids? Is it interfering with your ability to be, a kind of a compassionate and grounded mom or partner, family member, so on?
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, what role would you say self-compassion plays in our dealing with stress?
So self-compassion is another very important piece. And it's kind of, it's related to mindfulness in a way that, you know, you need to have some mindfulness to be self-compassionate. Because mindfulness sort of tells you, it makes you self-aware. Oh, this is what's happening with me. I'm actually feeling quite sad. And self-compassion is then, you know, how much you respond to that sadness. Oh, self-compassion, one way to think of it is asking yourself, what do I need? Mindfulness might be, what am I feeling? What's happening with me? Self-compassion is what do I need? What unmet needs might be coming up for me? The thing is with most of us, when we get stressed and because of fight or flight, we tend to push ourselves very hard. It's self-critical, you know, try and make ourselves do more and more and more, get panicky, and sometimes, you know, not look after our health, not eat well, or not get enough rest, or, you know, rush from one thing to another, not have any downtime, kind of be critical of ourselves, you know, tell ourselves we're not doing a good enough job, and why did this happen, we must have done something wrong. Self-compassion is trying to replace that response with a more kind and compassionate, mindful response to ourselves. Like if this was, you know, someone we loved, if this was your child, if this was your parent or your partner, you probably wouldn't react if they were stressed, you know, by sort of saying, oh, look, what's wrong with you? You know, you're a failure. You might be more likely to react and tell them it's going to be okay, and doing a good job, you're a good person, look how much work you've put in, that's wonderful. So it's a kind of a self-kindness, I guess, is one aspect. The other aspect is a sense of, like, humanity, like you're only human. It's a sense of you're only human, you don't have to be perfect. It's okay to relax a little, ease up a little bit. It's okay if you make a mistake, you can recover. So it's that kind of a response to yourself. It can be very helpful when you're stressed, you know, to kind of take care of yourself emotionally.
Mm-hmm. So in your book, you have a whole chapter on the topic being healthy in the face of stress. Could you share with us some tips for a little bit of this chapter on how is it that we can live healthy in the face of stress?
So, sure, you know, and that's a very important piece because stress, it's a mind-body thing. It's not just taking care of your mind, but it's taking care of your body as well. You need to take care of your mind and your body because often the stresses we face today are longer term. You know, they play out over months and years, weeks. It's not just something that's over with quickly. You know, we face difficult challenges like courting ourselves or finding a good relationship or, you know, trying to achieve our goals and work very hard. So you've got to take care of your mind and your body. And the thing with stress is, you know, the research shows that people get unhealthy when they're stressed. People drink more alcohol. Stress can interfere with your sleep. People do you eat sort of to comfort yourself. You eat sugary, fatty things for emotional reasons. Part of it's your body's kind of chemical response. Part of it's what your mind's doing, the anxiety. And sometimes also people start, you know, you don't go to your yoga class or you don't do your run. Or people feel like they don't have time to do the healthy things. They just got to get the job done. But actually, you need to have a stress management routine and to stay healthy so you have the strength to deal with whatever's going on. Some ways to stay healthy are to decide, you know, what's going to be your way of your healthy routine. And what, for example, exercise. Exercise can help you manage stress. It can help you calm down. It can strengthen your body. It can increase your concentration and your motivation. It can help your mood. It can get you away from your problems. So, you know, I guess you've got to decide what might be a good exercise routine for managing stress. Some people, it just might be gentle stretching or yoga or going for a walk. It doesn't have to be, you know, very heavy exercise, but some people like more vigorous exercise, like aerobic exercise, like going, you know, climbing a mountain or running. So you have to decide what do you naturally enjoy, what would be a good exercise for you. And then it's just kind of making a plan to get started. Like, it's ideal if you have a routine going already, because sometimes it's a bit harder to start it when you're under stress, but it's never too late. So just make a plan. Okay, what's, you know, how often do I want to exercise? Maybe 3 times a week, 4 times a week to begin with, or 2x a week to begin with. And for how long, what kind of exercise am I going to do, and when can I do it? And you can make a contract with yourself. And then you also might want to anticipate barriers, like, or what's going to get in the way of exercising. Maybe I'll have a thought that I've got too much to do. Okay, how can I counter that thought? How can I challenge that thought? Maybe you want to make a plan to exercise with a friend or sign up to a class. Maybe you want to put your running shoes by the door. So you want to also set up your environment to make it more likely that the healthy behavior is going to happen. And the same happens for food. You know, when we stress, we might just grab the nearest thing, you know, even if it's a packet of chips or something unhealthy because we don't feel like we've got time. So it's taking time on the weekend to decide what healthy food you want, to buy healthy food, to cook. you know, to cook for the week, to make at least a healthy dish. So a lot of this looking after your health is about preparation and planning. And the other piece, it's about motivating yourself and willpower and motivating yourself that you have to keep thinking about how is this going to help me, think about how good I'll feel after I've done this exercise, or this is something I need, you know, this will help me get through my stress. So it's sort of putting in positive patterns of thinking about it as well. And the third piece is anticipating what's going to go wrong and what's going to get in the way and trying to problem solve around that.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you, Melanie, for being with us today. And I also want to congratulate you on this amazing book. I'm sure all our listeners will be very interested in purchasing it. I guess it's already available in Amazon if they want to get a copy.
Yes, yeah, already available in Amazon. It's called The Stress-Proof Brain. So stress-proof. So just go. You can just go to Google and put in The Stress-Proof Brain, or you can go to Amazon. And, you know, it will take you to Amazon or to some other site that sell it. And you can also go to my blog on Psychology Today. I write a blog for Psychology Today. It's called The Mindful Self-Express. Self-Express, or you can just put in Melanie Greenberg, PhD, or Dr. Melanie Greenberg, and it will take you to some of my sites, and then that will have links to the book as well. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much. I talk on behalf of all our listeners. We're very, very grateful to have had you here today, and we wish you all the best with promoting and, you know, having people get this book, because I think stress is a very interesting topic nowadays. I think everybody really should get a copy and should get up their hope. You know, there are many people out there who are going through difficult things, and I'm sure that reading this book, listening to this interview, following you on Psychology Today blog, I'm sure good things can really help the people who need it. So I really hope you can find a way to get this book through to all those people who need it. And thanks so much for taking the time to writing it and also sharing it with us today here.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all your support of my work. And I really am grateful to you.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you. All the best. Hope to have you soon again. Bye, with us. Take care. Bye-bye. Bless you.
Take care. Bye-bye.